I'm Carissa.
And we have Torbjørn here.
Torbjørn. Yep.
Awesome. I got it right.
Yeah.
What is that originated from?
Like, it's Scandinavian. So it's like, could be Norwegian or Danish. My family's from Norway, but there's a lot of similarities between those two countries. Similar language.
Oh, that's awesome. Have you been in like the music game pretty long or?
I've been playing music since I was 4. My older cousins and my sister, we're all like string players, violinists, and did all the orchestra stuff all through our childhoods. And it's cool now looking back, but as a kid, I was like, this is not cool. Girls don't like this. I'm not like the star of any like sports team or whatever. So when I became a teenager and I realized that I like had autonomy over my choices and picked up a guitar by choice and started doing that, that's when I like really fell in love with music.
Oh, that's so cool. And then, so it said you went to school in University of Liverpool?
Yeah, okay. Northwest England.
How was that? I bet that was like cool as shit.
It was super cool, man. I I was a really shitty student, I think. Most of my like childhood, I never thought I would go to college. I was like, you know, whatever 14 or 12 years or however much it is until you graduate from high school is like, that's enough for me. I'm done with this. And my grandma like begged me. She's like, you have to do a year of school in Norway. She comes from Norway. And she's like, that would be like, you know, feel like my life's work complete if you would go do, she's a musician as well. She's like, if you would go do 1 year of like music studying in Norway, that would be awesome. I was like, I'll do it because I love you.
Yeah.
And you are the one that brings music to our family. So of course. And then I got recruited to this school in Liverpool from there, kind of like by accident. I didn't really want to go. My mom was like, you'd be really dumb to turn this opportunity down as a musician. So I was like, all right, I'll go do this. And it ended up like completely changing my life being in England for those years.
Oh my gosh. I bet. Did you meet any like interesting producers over there or like?
Some people that were like famous at the time when I went over there, there's a group that was really, really big at the time called the Wombats, kind of like indie rock, pop, you know, UK indie stuff. And their bass player Tord was my neighbor when I was in college.
Oh, wow.
And so I was really fortunate to play a little bit of music with him and just learned a ton from being around him. And then my like, I don't know, I guess like pop star, like claim to fame is Paul McCartney handed all our diplomas over at my graduation. So I like am so fortunate I got to meet a Beatle in my lifetime.
That's actually pretty impressive.
That's like a goal. Yeah. Wow.
Not many of them left to meet.
Totally. Exactly. You hope that it's like this dream come true moment, but I was like such a fucking nerd. I was like, oh my God, you're like such an inspiration and like, thank you for everything. And he was like, yeah, cool.
He's like, cool, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I get that. So have you been in the Seattle area like your whole life besides the Liverpool experience?
Yeah, born and raised in Tacoma, moved to Europe when I was 18 and moved back when I was 24. Whoa. And now I'm still, was in Seattle for a while and I'm actually now one town south in Tacoma.
Oh, okay. That's awesome. Would you say like the grunge scene of Seattle influenced your music in some way, shape, or form? Because we were jamming out to your tunes before this, and it was it definitely had some like angst to some of them, but also others seemed to be really like deep and introspective, and it was cool to listen to say the least. But
yeah, well, thank you for listening to the songs, by the way. That's awesome.
Oh.
I think like there's definitely some like just depressing self-hate kind of vibe that comes from being in the Pacific Northwest. And you hear that in all the grunge music, right? Nirvana, like Kurt Cobain was just like so sad all the time. And I think that is true, like regardless of what genre you're making. I'm making a lot of like EDM and dance inspired music now, but before, when I was playing in rock bands and stuff, it definitely was like very grunge, very Nirvana, Soundgarden influence. And yeah, like you said, I think that just comes from the area. Everyone's into that stuff. That's like our hometown heroes, you know?
No, I could totally see that. Have you been in the EDM like scene? What made you go from one genre, it sounds like, to another almost?
Or? Yeah, from rock and roll to EDM.
Yeah, kind of a 180, right?
Yeah.
I'm definitely making a lot of music now that as a teenager, I thought I would always hate, like auto-tune on your voice or anything with like a catchy melody. As a kid, I would just be like, ugh, that sounds like Backstreet Boys. I don't like it. but it's kind of a long transition, I guess. I always wanted to make recordings of myself as a kid, and it was always so expensive to get in the studio. And so that's where my college stuff and going to school to be a recording engineer, that was like to answer that conundrum as an artist.
Yeah.
Needing a CD and wanting to like have my tracks up on MySpace back in the day and all these other websites. And I just wanted to do that for myself. And the more that I got into that and the more hats that I wore, like writing songs, singing the songs, recording the album, all of this type of stuff, I don't know, I just became kind of like a recluse. And it became really hard to do all of that stuff and like maintain all of the friendships of like four other bandmates and stuff like that. And I kind of just recognized one day, I was like, I should figure out how to do this without all of the other people in the equation. And this is going to sound like super jaded and like I hate all my old friends, and that's totally not the case, but it just became easier after a while to like not deal with all the personalities, right? Everyone has their own thing that they want to do creatively, and you're trying to mash four or five people's like dream into one thing that pleases everybody, and that gets to be really hard to do. Someone is like living their dream and the other four guys are like, yeah, we're kind of like dealing with this guy being the lead singer or whatever. So I kind of just stopped doing the whole band collaborative thing and just did a solo career. And then I just started moving further away from live instruments because I'm already on a computer to make this album, and synthesizers and keyboards become a part of it.
Oh no, that's cool. So do you play any, well, I know it's quarantine, so like you probably haven't in a while, but have you played like the Seattle scene, I guess? I don't know. We're not as familiar with
any shows, social distance shows, drive-ins, anything since quarantine?
Nothing in front of an audience since quarantine. The drive-in shows would be really cool, but I think a lot of the people that are playing those are maybe like a tier up or a little, you know, farther ahead in their career and have like enough clout to sell tickets to an event that's as non-traditional as that. I've been focusing on live streaming. So I started a Twitch channel last year. And my show that I do every Monday is called Bass of the Mondays. So it's like all of my DJ homies that we would be playing shows and we go to festivals together anyways, we just get together at my studio and stream our concerts from home, basically.
Oh, that's so awesome. She's been dabbling in that since quarantine.
Yeah, I've been trying to like set up some live streams for homies, and I'll do visuals for them just in our living room. So very...
just low-key.
Yeah, low-key very endeavor. Just... homemade type feel. So but it was just nice to be able to like have people get together and like create something like
musically
and just visually too, you know, like it's, I mean, even just like the side little lasers that I have are, you know, a nice little addition to like the live stream. I feel like it's, I don't know, it can be like a whole experience. It doesn't have to be just a live stream. So I've been having fun doing that and just like spending low key time with friends as well. Cause it's been, it's been like
isolating more of that recklessness.
Haven't been able to go to shows and.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's trying to fill a void that it can't really fill in a way, but at the same time, I feel like it brings some other stuff to the forefront. So like you brought up like the visual arts, and I don't know if that means like VJing or live painting and stuff like that, but that's been really cool because I have a lot of friends that are like kind of at the ground level, but are really passionate about that stuff. And then live streaming has been their opportunity to like do that for an audience when they might not be able to get booked at a club or at a festival doing VJing. So it's been good for a lot of different facets of art to come together in that way.
Well, I also feel like it's also opened up another realm of a way to market and market yourself as an artist, whether that be whatever your art form may be, if it's music or even if it's, you know, you can live stream pretty much anything nowadays. So I feel like, you know, if you're able to just be on a consistent basis of doing that, it'll definitely help spread your art and spread your creations a little bit better.
Totally. All the like non-traditional things that don't necessarily have a place in a traditional venue now have a place. My friend, Kelsey, she's been on Twitch this last year and she like starts her stream in like basically like in her underwear or in a bikini and then like paints her entire body like with a mirror in front of her. She's a phenomenal painter. And she'll show like, you know, or, you know, photos of like different stages through the thing. And by the end of her stream, she's like looking like a full like landscape painting or something crazy on her body. Yeah, it's super cool. I don't know where you would see that outside of Twitch, but I'm like super stoked that she does that because it's really awesome.
Yeah. And at least in today's day and age of Twitch, I don't know how long you've been. I know you said you started a Twitch a year ago, but whether or not you've been on that platform for very long, because it has been around for quite some time, that wasn't even an option, you know, back some odd years ago for Twitch. It was like a requirement for you to be playing video games for a certain amount of time in your stream. So for them, I mean, I feel like it's a big part of Amazon taking it over, but for them to realize that market is there, like, oh, people that do creative things that are, you know, at home, they might want a community to start to, you know, spread their personality and their creations too. So I give big props to Twitch, but I feel like I don't know. I've been following a lot of drama on it. Have you had a lot of issues with like DMCA or any like?
Oh yeah, for sure. All of the replays of our videos are like 2/3 of it is muted because we're DJing. You know, even our own tracks get muted because of our distribution has deals with all these other streaming platforms that ID the song through like some Shazam type app and you know, mute it and all that stuff. So it's a huge pain in the ass and doesn't give it a lot of replay value, but fortunately at least Twitch doesn't like punish you while you're streaming. So I don't know if you guys have seen any of the DJ streams on like Facebook, but they've just totally screwed everybody over. Yeah. Mute you or just pull your page down, like ban you from streaming for a week. And it super sucks. And I don't want to necessarily, I don't need to like make any money from Twitch, like per like the copyright issues and stuff like that. I just, like I was saying, I just want to try to fill some part of that void of us not having any shows.
Yeah, exactly. Especially, do you think, what is it? The Facebook drama and all like with the muted and stuff, do you think it had an effect on your Base Mondays and like every other or other people in the Seattle scene community?
For sure. This is the fourth season that I've been doing Base of the Mondays. We used to call it Case of the Mondays, but there's another artist. If you guys have seen I'm forgetting the Office Space is the name of the movie.
Yeah. It looks like you have a Case of the Mondays.
Yeah, totally.
We're going to need you to come in on Saturday.
So it was like, everyone hates Mondays. Everyone has to go back to school or go back to work. And it's like the start of your whole week. And the weekday is far inferior to the weekend, as we all know. So I was like, I'm going to just lift my friend's spirits and just turn Facebook Live on and DJ for a little while. And it went well and did a couple episodes. I was dealing with some muting and dealing with getting taken down, but it didn't matter in the first year that I was doing it because it was just me. And in the second and third year, I recognized like if I bring my friends on as guests and start treating this like a late night TV show, more people want to check it out. And as it grew, so did the amount of like issues with muting and stuff. So after 3 years of dealing with that on Facebook and having to restart episodes, they get archived in 2 or 3 separate videos because Facebook will end the episode. We have to restart it, blah, blah, blah. I was like, I'm done with Facebook. This is whack.
Yeah.
And it was between Twitch and YouTube. And because Twitch has like the subscriptions and stuff built into it, we were able to take some, you know, basically take some donations that way a little bit easier and like throw a couple bucks to the featured artists in exchange for them giving us our time. That was like the reasoning behind it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
How long would you say you've been a producer in the EDM community?
This, probably 5 years, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say like when I started using the program Ableton. Have you guys heard of Ableton?
Yeah.
So when I switched over to Ableton from whatever I was using before that, I think like that's really when the music that I was making changed.
Okay. Was it for the better in like just upping the game to the next level type thing or like?
I miss playing guitar a lot. I miss playing guitar on stage, but now that I'm singing and, you know, after a couple of years of just making instrumental beats and now that I'm putting my voice in my music again, I feel like that void is filled now. And so I think it's better and I'm able to do a lot more stuff on my own, like I said, without managing personalities of bandmates and stuff. So I like it more, but I also have a lot of peers in the industry that are like, bro, you used to make like really good rock music. What happened? It's like, well, people grow up and change.
Well, do you think if you ever got back into live shows, would you start like playing, like kind of doing a mashup type thing of like live music and producing stuff simultaneously?
I think so. I think a lot of the music that I'm going to produce and make recordings of is probably going to stay pretty EDM focused, but I'm also a big fan of seeing performances on like NPR Tiny Desk, and a lot of people that do that like electronic or hip hop music that is comes from beats and singing over beats, they'll bring like a whole jazz band on stage with them and the song sounds totally different and it's amazing. So I could definitely see something like that. I love jazz and classical music and I love, you know, all the instruments that come with that. So
well, I was gonna say you have a really good voice because we were actually talking about that.
Yeah, I was like, is he doing his own vocals? I was like, damn, these are pretty good. Like,
nice, thank you so much.
I was asking her if it was like a collab or something. I was just, you know, she first told me that, you know, you reached out and asked to be here and asked to be on the podcast and said that you were a producer and like electronic music. When she played that song, it was like the new one that you said that he wanted to come on here and announce. I don't know if that's a good segue or not, but I was just like, damn, these are some fire vocals, man. Like, I was not expecting that from when she just told me, like, an EDM producer from Seattle. I was just like, okay.
I'm really bad at explaining things to her.
Multi-talented here. More than just a producer. A good vocalist, too, so.
Awesome. Well, dude, thank you so much for saying that. That means a lot. It's like, it's the first time that I've sang in, you know, and put my voice out there in a really long time. So it's kind of like nerve wracking in a way. Like,
yeah.
Do I still got it? And even if I think I got it, like, are other people going to care about this? Or so, yeah, it's really like, it's reaffirming to hear that. I appreciate it.
No, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have that kind of internal thought process of like, oh, are people going to care about this? Are people going to appreciate it as much as I appreciate this? Do you have that kind of self-doubting thought about your music a lot?
Absolutely. I mean, I think everyone is their own worst critic, right? You're the first person that hears it and you're like the gatekeeper before anyone else gets to experience that. And I think just being, you both probably recognize this, being like creative people yourself, like being creative, I think also just opens your eyes and your perspective to a lot more things. And that's just that many more things to judge yourself against, right?
Yeah.
And I try my hardest to like, just take those inhibitions away and just look at it from, I don't know, some other omnipotent perspective. And that's hard sometimes. And you definitely, I think moving forward, what I'm trying to speak things into reality, right? I just want to like, I want to live the confidence of like, if I want to do something because I think it's awesome, then I should just assume everyone is going to think it's awesome. Because I think that starts with you. If yeah. you're like, hey, here's this thing that I made. I don't know. I hope you like it. I don't know. It's not perfect, but maybe tell me what you think. That person's going to be like, what the hell? Maybe this is whack.
Sets up yourself for false intentions. You know, if you come out the gate and say, hey, I just made this super fire beat or whatever it may be, and you feel that it's the coolest thing in the world, then, you know, I feel like it's gonna at least bring that sort of attention to it if you're sharing it with the world, you know.
Totally. Set the first impression with how you like present what you're doing. Like you said, I'm so excited about this. You have to listen to it.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, all right, let's check it out.
So do you have any like self mantras to say or to push forward when you get into that like mindset or mode of like telling that evil voice in your head to shut the fuck up and like just keep pushing forward in whatever you're trying to achieve in whatever mix or.
That's a really good question. I have a lot of little things. I don't know that any one is like a mantra, like on a daily basis or every time that I sit down in a creative space that I tell myself. But lately I've definitely been focusing on the idea of less is more, and you know, KISS, keep it simple, stupid, is something that I've been told by a lot of peers and mentors and stuff over the years. And those are probably, those are the two that come to mind, but I don't know, maybe it's time to like sit down and meditate on those. Cause I definitely still, even as I'm saying this, like, it's all good. And I'm trying to come at this with more confidence. So everyone else has confidence instilled from me. Definitely still have the days where I'm like, man, maybe everything that I'm doing is totally bullshit and I'm trash.
No, I get that. Those like the kind of mantras you tell yourself when you like get in those days of like, what the fuck am I doing with my life type thing, or how do you get? I guess. Sorry.
No, you're good. Man, that's a great question. I don't know that I have like any particular way that I overcome those moments. I've got a couple people really close to me in my life. My girlfriend Jacqueline is like unbelievably supportive emotionally in those moments. And then my friends Dom and Joseph and Nathan and Nathaniel and Sam, that's like all guys that I make music and collaborate with. They're the types of people that always are like, no, you're like the Michael Jordan of your team. You're the best. You're like amazing. Yeah. And I'm so fortunate that I get that kind of encouragement from people around me. Cause in moments where I like fail to give it to myself, I definitely get it from the people around me, which is amazing.
That's so good to hear.
Yeah. I feel like that's what's key in continual creation is hearing just even like one feedback from an outside source. Is just like, oh, hell yeah, man. Like, for me personally, I played like my first visual show for a friend. It was like very low key in this small town. And like the couple people that would come up after the show and just give praise to like what was going on. It was just like, I don't know. It was like a whole new feeling of like a whole new purpose of like, okay, it took away those like mind feelings of like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this or maybe I'm not cut out for this. It's just like, okay, I can make at least a couple people happy. That's all that matters, you know? And if that couple people turns into 10 people and turns into 20, I make my heart happy. So I just really enjoy that's for me what the community brings. And
yeah,
that's what brings joy to the community as well for other people, for whatever they may be in it for, whether it be friendship or just the music or whatever it may be. Like, it's got a lot of branches for you to like enjoy
and
blossom. Absolutely.
But one question I wanted to ask is through the 5 years of you saying that you've kind of been starting with Ableton and producing electronic music, how have you seen your music transform throughout the years? Did you start with like learning like a specific genre like house or you know trance or whatever, and kind of take those learnings from learning the basics of those types of styles and creating your own, because at least from what I listened to today, you do have a pretty unique style. You have a pretty unique sound. So I kind of want to hear like the journey of creating what you've created today.
I'm stoked to hear that. I'm stoked to hear that you think that you find my sound like unique in that way. Cause that's definitely like a big thing that I think every artist strives for, is to be their own thing, to innovate, not emulate. Right. But yeah. I think it all starts at some point. It starts with emulation. Cause if you know nothing, you got to learn from like someone or something and take some style and learn some techniques and all of that. My first like view into electronic music was as someone that was like in like another area of music, you know, playing rock music and grunge and punk and all of that stuff. I was kind of like, I didn't even have the right vernacular. I assumed that like all electronic music is called techno. And then like in 2012 or living in the UK in like 2009 to 2012, I started to like change my view of what that term was. And I was like, okay, now I guess I think all electronic music is called dubstep now. I don't really understand why that's different, but I definitely can hear that we're not like, we're not Boots and Cats anymore. We're now like more like wah, wah, and all that weird like Skrillex stuff. But I wasn't like into it yet enough to want to dissect and understand like the theory or the techniques behind what was happening. I just kind of would go out to drink with friends or go out to a nightclub or whatever and hear those sounds in England being DJ'd by the DJs and recognize like, okay, I guess techno sounds like this now and it's called dubstep. And that was as far as I really understood. And yeah. I started listening to more like British pop and rock music when I was in college, and the like big thing that I noticed that was very different is that they were using synthesizers and they were using like computer sounds in their rock music over there. The Wombats, my buddy's band, tons of synths and keyboards and stuff on their album. And it was kind of like, I saw it as maybe sort of like this like Prince like soundscape revival, some like 80s stuff coming back into the modern sound. But the more that I dove into it, and the more that I was like asking my peers, like, what is this sound? And like, how do you make these sounds? Especially all the kids in the UK, they were like, oh, that comes from house. That comes from drum and bass. That comes from whatever. Mm-hmm. And me understanding like, okay, there's so much more to electronic music than I thought. One of my college classmates, John Gilmore, he's like now super successful producer and engineer. And I look up to that guy a lot. He gave me a recommendation of an artist that totally changed everything for me. And that was the Bloody Beetroots. He was like, this dude is making electronic music, basically house music, but all the sounds sound like some like The Clash, like Ramones, like punk rock stuff. And so that like married the two things in a way that made sense to me. I was like, this dude is punk rock as fuck. And everything that he's doing comes from a computer. I definitely want to figure out how to make stuff like this. That was like where it all changed. And then evolution from there, I moved back in 2013. I moved back to Washington and I'm trying to connect with other people that are into that type of sound. And then all my buddies back home, they're like, yeah, we don't really, we're more into like the drum and bass and like the offshots of that genre. Mm-hmm. And so this thing was happening called halftime. People were making sounds with drum and bass preset sounds, but they were taking the drum beats and playing them at half speed. And then that to me sounded like, this is just really distorted, heavy punk rock hip hop beats. I can get into this too. And groups like Noisia and Ivy Lab and G Jones and many other people were like kind of the champs of that sound at the time. And I started kind of slowly but surely getting like talked into going out to these festivals and having whatever trippy experiences late at night hearing these sounds. And I was like, I think I get like what I want to try to do with this electronic music now, taking the like anger and angst and like grittiness that comes from all the punk rock guitar music that I grew up on, and then making those sounds on a computer with some like hip hop elements into it. And that was kind of like what got me here, basically.
Oh, that's awesome. What festivals did, like, were there any life-changing ones or crazy experiences that you had at? Because I know the Gorge is out there, right? Or I know the fest. There's Festivals at the Gorge. Wow, I almost tripped over my own words there, but...
The Gorge is here. There are festivals at the Gorge, and I'm, like, embarrassed to say I've never been to the Gorge. But I just never went out there yet.
It's, like, 7 hours from, like, Seattle, so I understand. Like,
yeah.
It's on the other side of the state, but...
Yeah. I've been to, so Capitol Hill Block Party and Bumbershoot are the two festivals that I have been to most frequently in Seattle. I've, when I was sound engineering, before I was producing, I got to run sound for one of the outdoor stages at Capitol Hill Block Party. And that was definitely, that was the most like focused time staring at the stage, hearing every note of every song that was being played because I was in charge of how it sounded coming through the sound system. And that for me was like, I think I get what the like festival culture is here at Seattle. And I'd seen some really cool shows at Bumbershoot when I was younger. I had got a spare ticket from one of my friends in high school. We got to see Iggy Pop like in sight of Bryant basically and on stage at the main stage and some stuff like that. But in terms of festivals that influenced me as an electronic artist, I think the first one I ever went to was somewhere in like Central California, Blue Mountain Event Center, I think is what it's called. And the festival is called Organic Festival. And that was the first festival where I truly heard like, I was like, this is the weirdest shit I've ever heard. And it was an artist called Yeti.
You guys Yeti's familiar with amazing.
I was like, I don't know. I was like still in like my mid-20s, impressionable, like mostly sober kid having a very like non-sober experience and having my like peak moment of being super tired and super inebriated. And Yeti comes on stage and starts playing like whatever the hell he was doing that night. And I was like, I don't understand what's happening, but I'm in. This is tight.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I have yet to see Yeti. He had his, I think, trifecta little triple experience roll through town one day, and I thought about going, but I don't know, stars didn't align that night, but I super, like, regret not going to that show. It was, from what I saw on, like, Snapchats from the friends, it was an event of its own, but.
Totally. I think it's called Trifinity, right?
Trifinity, yeah.
Yeah, him and his younger brother and a friend of theirs. I think it's the three of them just being weird on stage together.
Yeah.
They were the headlining act at the 7-year anniversary of Wormhole. And a friend of mine who used to live in Oakland, I was crashing on his couch at the time and got to see them. And I didn't realize that, like, I was familiar with Yeti and I knew that his younger brother made music as well, but I was not familiar with what their show was like. And I was like, this is every bit as weird. Like imagine like Yeti, but he's like with his two best friends and like whatever bullshit and unprofessional like hilarity happens. That's like what that show is. Yeah. And it was phenomenal. I was like laughing the whole time and dancing. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, those are always great. I feel like that's what makes an event, a memorable event, is making it a unique experience that's one and of its own. That
I mean, psychedelics help make it a more unique experience too,
but when you have three motherfuckers walking out in hazmat suits while you're tripping on psychedelics and they're doing some like funky dance moves and fucking triangle Illuminati shit, like, it just takes your trip to a whole another level. It
really does.
So it, compared to just having some dude just stand behind, you know, the basic, you know, mix, which is good in type, but there better be some good visuals so I can look at too. You know, I don't need to just see some guy at his deck, you know, touching buttons, you know. It's a good side experience.
Yeah, and I think you're so on the money for like the direction of what is happening. And I don't mean to bring any like stereotype into the conversation, and I say this non-judgmentally, but I'm like super ready to be done with the like white dudes with laptops look of EDM. I think it's really tired, and I think it's going to take people bringing instruments on stage and doing weird shit with their friends and being really like avant-garde and original and innovative with how they're in, you know, adding other interactivity or other art mediums like visuals or having like what's happening in the audience influence what's happening in the performance. It's another thing that I love about streaming. Whatever people are saying in the chat is going to influence what is happening in the stream. And I look forward to like some element from that, from this like weird era of COVID quarantine streaming. I look forward to that piece getting brought on stage when we have concerts again.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I feel like it'll open up an opportunity to have more people experience the show, because at least in my mindset, there were recordings of sets of festivals and stuff like that, but they were like exclusive, or the artist would, you know, release them somewhere at their own will. But to like, you know, pay a small fee to access Electric Forest sets for the weekend to watch while I'm at home, I feel like would be like,
that's the kind of, I'm like,
you know,
do I want to pay for this? I don't know. Like, I appreciate the good music, but also
I feel like it would be, I mean, I've done it over this, the quarantine. Like, I paid for summer camp, and I feel like I paid for a couple other ones that I really wanted to see. So it's just, you know, for the right person, it's a good market. It's definitely, in my eyes, also a cool way for people to like budget see their artists, you know. I don't like that, you know. I know that people have to get paid, and it takes money to put on these events, but some of these things are just like outrageously expensive to go to, you know, costs and travel costs and tickets. But I don't know, that's like kind of like the fun about it too. Like, that's what I kind of miss about the shows and festivals, is like having something to work hard to go to, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, this festival's in a few months, I gotta get my ticket, I gotta get my car camping, I gotta get maybe VIP if I want it, so I gotta hustle. And I don't know, I feel like that's I don't know. For me, what I miss about like normal life is, would you say about the same thing? Do you miss kind of like having some stuff to look forward to, some stuff
like
to,
shows or something?
Festivals
for you to go see in general.
Yeah,
totally. I mean, I was just having like a super like emotionally charged conversation with my girlfriend Jacqueline the other night, and I was having a super rough day, and we had gotten in some, you know, stupid argument over nothing, like you do with your partner sometimes. And and so we were sitting down in her room and just kind of stretching out and doing some yoga, and I was like, you know, I think everything that is making this day hard would not feel hard at all if all of the other things that I've been missing this last year, performing, seeing performances, being involved in festival culture, even like the day jobs or night jobs or whatever, of being a sound engineer or being some auxiliary staff member at a festival that I like complained about 2 years ago. I would like give so much just to be out of my house and to have those things be there again. So it's definitely been like a different perspective, and I've learned to like check my patience and my gratitude a little bit in that regard. And I'm sure a lot of people have, but at the same time, like with family members who are, you know, at health risk of what's going on right now, I also am like very appreciative that we've been able to take a break from this stuff when we've needed to. And it's, it's hard to say that, 'cause in the same breath, I want to say like that I feel so bad for so many of my peers who are out of work right now and like have had this thing that they love like stripped away from them, and these experiences left a huge void. So it's really hard to have one correct answer to that, but I look forward to us having the maybe there isn't a correct answer.
I definitely look forward to the day we can all get together with our friends and you know, be weird and stick things up our butts, you know, like crystals and whatnot. But just kidding, that's not what happens at EDM festivals all the time. But
yeah, maybe Burning Man. Actually, that definitely happens at Burning Man.
I guarantee you, man.
That's a goal list. But
yeah, that's a festival I would love to go to in my lifetime to experience. I just need to get dusty for those 7 days or however long it is.
Like, 7 days?
Totally. Well, and that goes back to what you were just saying a second ago, like the price point of being able to be a part of this experience from afar, seeing a stream versus like the flight or the drive and the ticket and car camping and all this stuff to go there. Like, people that go to Burning Man definitely are not you know, living in poverty, or if they are, they're like working all year to make that trip work. And I don't know what my comment is on like the financial sustainability of that or whatever. I would have gone this last year had it still gone. It would have been my fourth year. To work on a stage and to like perform to as many people and connect with as many people as possible. I'm not as stoked about the camping conditions. It's hot as fuck out there for however many days you're there. But that's something, you know, back to the point you were making a minute ago, that's something that I hope we can find a better answer for. Cause I know a lot of people just don't go to festivals cause they're like, I don't have $1,000 to spend to go do this and not earn money at my job while I'm taking time off to go do it or whatever. It's like, we need a solution to like have that some part of that experience offered to people who don't have another way to experience it, even if it's only that small piece, right?
Well, and I also feel for the people for the Wooks out there that definitely made made their living in a sense of going from festival to festival to festival, selling their artwork, their creations, crystals, glasswork, paintings, whatever it may be. Yeah. Like, you got drugs, ketamine, sketamine, you know, you never know. But there's a handful of people that, you know, just, and, you know, it's a kind of goal for me kind of to have like a little nomadic kind of self come quarantine, or not quarantine, come festival season.
Post-quarantine
festival season to, you know, have like a thing that, you know, her and I can load up the animals in and hop from festival to festival and meet people and talk to them. And
we're kind of hoping to get press passes from this, but like
that would be a nice,
that's a fingers crossed thing,
nice though. Addition to a podcast going on. But you know, I make a handful of stuff. She makes a handful of stuff. And the whole idea of selling stuff online is just really, I like, cool to me. So,
I'm the opposite.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me. I just want to do my drugs and listen to music.
You can do that. I'll sell all this stuff. But that's for me, like, future goals of when the world comes back to normal. Do you have similar or bigger moves for yourself of when things go back to normal for the world?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, man, I'm just resonating with a lot of what you guys are saying, and I'm like recognizing parallels in my relationship with my girlfriend Jacqueline as well. We're both like very creative and have like slightly different views on like how capitalistic we want to be in that atmosphere, or however you want to label that. But I think that's really cool, first of all, and I think you guys will, if that's your passion is to be like the press entity through the podcast at those festivals, I think you guys will totally achieve that. And I like wish you absolute like highest vibes and good energy on all of that. My version of that is like a live-in sprinter, and my live stream travels to whatever city I'm touring or whatever festival I'm performing at. And Jacqueline, my partner, and her mandala painting classes and her art therapy stuff comes with and has its booth and its place at all of these clubs and all of these festivals.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be so, at least for me being a veteran, like art therapy has been like life-saving. So that's cool that she does that kind of stuff. And that'd be even cooler to like bring to festivals and stuff, especially the people on drugs trying to like face their demons and shit. Cause I feel some people can have a bad trip and then it just all turn around with one experience. But
I feel like art and just being creative in general is just really good for the soul. Bringing stuff into this world that, you know, hasn't been, or, you know, won't be brought into it unless you do something about it is something just really meaningful and wholesome to me. Like, I don't know, like, that brings a lot of joy to me, whether it be like a painting, an acrylic pour, or a visual set, or, you know, a tie-dye or whatever, maybe, or even a meal for her. It's something that wasn't created without my energy, and I hope that other people have that same sort of lookout to what they make. I don't know if you do.
It seems
like you do. It seems like you have that kind of, based on what I've heard, like, it seems like you do pour a lot of energy into your music and a lot of feeling and a lot of emotion. So,
Yeah, I think all of that stuff is, and I'm sure you both as like creators and creators within multiple mediums of art, and you mentioned cooking and all of that stuff, like just because you're not writing something down in a notebook doesn't mean it's like not like a your diary entry or whatever, right? And you're, like you said, pouring your energy or pouring your experience into something that now is an existing tangible thing, and you can share that with someone or gift it to someone. There's totally a lot of power in that, and I don't know that everyone who does that necessarily recognizes just how profound that can be. I'm probably sounding like a little strange right now with how I'm describing it, but I do put a lot of importance into that stuff because you have a choice with however you want to spend your time or whatever you want to do or whatever you want to not do. And in the butterfly effect mentality, like that has a ripple that affects everything around it. And if you want to create something that comes from a place of positivity and share that with the people around you, you're going to be influencing those people to do the same to the people around them. Or inversely, if you're having a terrible day and you're being like really self-deprecating, or your own frustrations of what you're dealing with gets projected onto someone else in a way that's not their fault or doesn't have anything to do with them, that can amplify what their next action or their next thought is going to be. And that comes out in, like you said, in food and the art that you create and what you choose to wear today and how you want to talk to someone and even the tone of your voice and everything. It's hard not to think about that so much that it's like paralyzing, but yeah, on days when you can find like a good balance, it's really cool to see like how you can affect your surroundings in cool and in positive ways.
Would you say your music could, how do I put it? Okay. Had to think of how I wanted to word it. But so for your music, would you say like the angstier stuff, is it related to more of like you're feeling really anxious that day or like angry at something, or like if you have like a upbeat banger type, is it like you're in, it's like a really good day? Does that kind of thing affect your producing?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm trying to be so intentional with everything that I do now as a musician. And I want the stuff that I'm writing and creating to be like a truthful telling of something that happened to me or some experience that I shared with someone. But I also want to write it in a way to where I'm not just like lamenting about a bad day that I had. Cause I don't necessarily think that is going to resonate with someone in a way that they can use that for good. Right. But if I can write my story and my experience with a friend or what I've been dealing with in my relationship or in my personal life or with my family, if I can write that in a way to where I'm being honest about my experience, but also word it in a way to where someone else can hear those lyrics and be like, oh, this is exactly what I'm going through, then I think in a way, especially for the angstier stuff, I hope that it can be a way that people can help cope with what like troubling things they might be going through. And in the song that I'm putting out, Seen a Ghost, coming out here in just a couple days, this is like a story that I experienced with several people that are close to me that had really, really tough years, financial struggles, substance abuse problems, you know, verbal or physical abuse problems. These are like not things that are like fun to listen to in a song. You're not going to like wake up and be like, yeah, I'm trying to have this great day and like listen to this super sad ass song. But for people that are experiencing that don't have that outlet, if they're not a creative person in the way that I am, they don't necessarily get to like have an outlet through physical activity, sports, or going to the gym or whatever. There's a lot of people that don't necessarily have that outlet that are experiencing these things, and they might not have anyone or anything telling them like this is a shared experience and it's like totally okay if you're feeling this way. And so I hope that, and my intention is with the darker songs that I'm writing, that can just kind of be that like other person, other voice to someone being like, I'm also dealing with this and it sucks, but you're not alone. And sometimes that's like all you can say if someone's having a bad day, is just like be a shoulder to cry on. And hopefully in some way that this song that's coming out can be that for people. Cause I know a lot of people have had really, really rough years.
Yeah. No, I personally can relate to listening to the darker music on deployment, just when you're like by yourself in a different country during the holidays and you don't have your family, like your head does go to a dark place. So it's good to like hear musicians like yourself getting more into the like essentially recognizing like it's okay to feel a certain way and like other people feel the same way, it's okay type stuff. But
yeah, it's gonna be all right. It's gonna be hard sometimes, but we're gonna get through it.
Exactly.
I was gonna ask, you seem pretty grounded and well understanding of, you know, your mindset and have an understanding that, you know, like you said, it's all going to be okay. With going back to also what you said about, you know, going to festivals and having tripping experience, have you turned to or used psychedelics in any sort of way for you getting to this point in your life of understanding those types of situations of down days and up days and, you know, inspiration, creativeness and all that stuff? Or, and you don't have to say understandably comfortability of sharing experiences.
No, you're all good. I just smile because I'm like, I wonder if my boss at the high school will hear this podcast and and feel some kind of way. I definitely have had all kinds of different experiences, especially in my college years with psychedelics, be it like intentionally or like accidentally drinking from the wrong punch bowl at a party or however that stuff happens. Yeah. But I think like as deep as I'm getting with any substances right now is like CBD. It definitely helps with some pain management. And then last year over the summer, I did like a short stint of microdoses, like quarter grams of psilocybin. I think it was Kibenzi mushrooms. And then I took a week off after doing like 7 to 10 days. I can't remember how many days in a row, but I took a week off and then did another week with blue oyster mushroom microdoses. Okay. Same thing, about like a quarter of a gram. Mm-hmm. Nothing that ever made me feel like I was actually having a psychoactive experience. Mm-hmm. But definitely, as someone who's like not very outwardly emotional, I would say I'm like pretty like closed off emotionally for the most part. I definitely felt like all of those walls melted away by the end of the week that the 2 weeks that I had experienced that microdose. And I'm someone that I like find a reason to cry maybe like once every 2 years. And that week I was finding a reason to cry about something both joyous and tragic, like every single day. And the release that I got from that emotionally and kind of the answers that I was finding for the questions that I was asking myself or the universe or what have you, I definitely was finding those through being way more in touch with my emotions. And I like absolutely attribute the microdose to that connection emotionally. Cause like I said, more often than not, I'm very like robotic brain, analytical thinker. And I don't lean on my emotions a lot, because as a kid who was like bullied and all these other, you know, tragic things that kids deal with, I just kind of learned to like not lean on my emotions. Cause whenever I did that when I was younger, I just felt like that's when the hard times came. But it's been really good for me to get back in touch with that this last year, because I don't know, imagine a life with no emotions. That doesn't sound like life at all.
Yeah. What you say, your brain, just coming from experience wise, is it more like, since you have an audio engineering degree, like would you say you have the engineer type brain where it's just like, if I don't have the black and white facts in front of me, I'm not 100% like, do I believe it type thing? I don't know if that.
Yeah. No, I totally understand what you're saying. Like some people are like very literal in the way that they think. And there's not a lot of reading between the lines. There's not a lot of room for metaphor and stuff like that. I have some students that are like that. And that's been an interesting contrast, because I was told as a kid that like ADD and maybe some like really mild spectrum autism. No, like, doctor had ever told me that, but I had some teachers and mentors and stuff that were like, that might be something that you're dealing with just based on like your behavioral patterns that we're noticing. So I definitely feel like as a kid, I was super like, if you're using slang words or using a metaphor to explain something to me, I'm going to like be way off with my understanding. And I feel like that has changed a lot as I've gotten older. I think engineer mindset is something that ironically came to me like later in life as I was kind of balancing out a literal brain with a more of like a, I don't know what the opposite word is. Maybe there's an answer in itself. I don't know what the opposite of literal is. So I must be very literal.
No, I get that.
But I definitely think I go back and forth. I've got left brain days and right brain days for sure. But yeah, my goal and what I hope is to like balance the both of those and be in control of like which days I'm having a right or a left brain day. Both as in terms of like utilizing that as a creative person and knowing when I need to focus on something very like factual and robotic and when I need to focus on something way more abstract, and as an educator, because like I said, I have a lot of students that are way more towards the literal side than what I remember myself being as a kid. And I want to make sure that those kids have like the best version of me as a mentor as possible. And I need a really deep understanding of that stuff to provide for those students in the best way.
Would you say you, I want to say like achieve homeostasis, but do you equal yourself out by meditating? Like, and if so, how do you do it? Because we were just talking about that today. And like, I didn't realize there was such things as like morning meditators and evening meditators. Like, have you tried both, or do you find one works like better than the other?
My longest stint of having a habit where I was balancing my body and mind regularly every day, it was about a year and a half period where like every day around 1 p.m. I was doing yoga for at least an hour.
Oh, wow.
And that's probably like mentally the most balanced I had ever been. I was living in England at the time. I had just gotten dumped by the girl that I thought I was going to propose to. I was feeling so just totally destroyed. My life's purpose was like not what I thought it was. And yeah, I just needed to figure out a way to like just not feel like crap and feel down on myself throughout the day. And so I would go as far into my day as possible until I felt like I can't deal with like how depressed I'm feeling right now. I need to do something. And then I would focus on at least an hour to two of yoga. And that would kind of balance me out until I dealt with it enough in the evening where I was like, okay, now it's time to go to bed. I need to be done with this day. And after doing that for a year, I found out that like towards the end of it, I was no longer doing that because I was like dealing with feeling shitty about getting dumped. Yeah. I was doing it because it had been this habit that was like making me feel balanced and good every day. And so I had taken this thing of like, I do this to deal with something that's painful versus like, I do this in pursuit of something that feels really, really good. Okay. And when I moved back from the UK, my schedule was not as open as it was right after college and being self-employed during that time. So I wasn't like able to dedicate that 2 hours every day to yoga, and my habits have changed quite a bit. But on a good week, I'm getting like a couple 20-minute sessions in every week, and that tends to happen still in either late morning or like early afternoon. And okay. I don't know if that's like intentional, that that's like the time that I think it serves me best, but probably just habit for that's kind of where it's always been.
Okay. No, I always like to hear about different like strategies and things of that nature. I guess that'd be the right word. Just for like equilibrium. But
I think doing some type of like first thing out of bed, I've been hearing from a lot of friends that's the move. And I tend to get out of bed and immediately my brain just starts racing 100 miles an hour. Like, what are you going to do today? What song are we writing today? What office work do we have to do? What are we going to do in school? All this stuff. And I think that having that mindset first thing out of bed every day, I think that leads to just feeling kind of tired and maybe not physically, but definitely mentally kind of exhausted. And I can tell, like, as I get a little bit older, comparing maybe I'm 32 now. I just turned 32 a month and a half ago. 32 compared to 22. I'm moving like way slower, not in a like, oh, like cranky old man way, but just in a, like, my motivation to like just go a million miles an hour all the time is not, that's not like not serving my intention as well. So I find myself like naturally slowing down. But again, not necessarily like choosing when those fast or slow moments happen. So I think meditation or some type of breathing exercise or something first thing in the morning for anyone that has a brain that races as fast as mine does when you wake up, that's got to be a good place to start.
Okay. That definitely makes sense. Definitely makes sense.
Seems like some good insight on.
What about you guys? Evening or morning?
So I mostly try and do it in the morning, but I have a thing where I'm not like a super yogi or anything. Like, I'll watch YouTube videos and hope I don't get annoyed by somebody's voice for too long. But because that's my biggest pet peeve with like some yoga videos is I'm just like, okay, I get it, I'm supposed to relax, can we move on to the next thing please? Like, and I do the yoga first and then I'll do like a guided meditation after, and then I just feel like I should just go back to sleep right now. And I feel like I definitely have the more up and at 'em first thing in the morning as soon as I wake up. Like, all the thoughts racing through my head. So, like, maybe I need to reevaluate that side of.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. Like, I wake up and my brain's dead. And it's just while I, like, fully get ready for the day. But I also feel like that's just a ploy of like laziness from quarantine and not really doing much throughout this past almost year. But I have my mind racing the most at the end of the day at night, so that's why like the comment of meditating at night came about, because we listened to some podcasts that mentioned it and I was like, I never thought about that, like never thought about just taking a break and meditating at night to try and. But I more so have like kind of just a throughout the day casual little meditation sessions of myself and whatnot. Like yoga, like random stretches, not necessarily setting a dedicated time through for the day for yoga. But I mean, I'll do random stretches and whatnot throughout the day.
I'm picking up on some like opposites attract kind of vibes with you two.
You know, I honestly have that same like outlook on her. She's a more dog person, I'm more cat person, but
she may be a cat person though.
Right on.
There's opposites. It's not fully opposite, but there's definitely, you know, the longer our relationship goes, the more that statement of opposites attract makes sense, you know?
At first, I think we both thought we were, like, the same person.
Yeah.
Essentially. And then, like, we've been together for, like, almost
2 years.
Yeah, almost 2 years now. And I'm just, like, we're, like, opposite enough that, like, we still attract to each other, I guess, if that makes sense.
There's still similarities, though.
There's still similarities, but, like.
Totally. Like
in the festival scene, so
met a small local show in Denver, and
shout out Cervantes.
Yeah, it's been
just kidding.
It's been a fun ride ever since. All the ups and downs and all arounds.
Awesome. It's like the things you have in common bring you together, and then the things that are different like keep your growth happening in tandem, right? Yeah, that's awesome.
We inspire each other, and as much as she motivates me, I hope I give her the same. In her endeavors.
She does.
But yeah, it's.
Would you say you're the same with your Mrs. Jackie?
Jacqueline.
Yeah, we, really similar story. We met through music and both being fans of like concerts and stuff like that. And we had so many things in common. And the more that we got to know each other, we found those little things that are very, very different. I'm a very literal and analytical thinker, and she's a very abstract and emotional thinker. And I've like helped her see things through that lens, and she has absolutely helped me see things through her lens in that way, and we've both become like way cooler people for knowing each other and being together. So
that's awesome. That's great that you feel that way too, and like,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. So a question I always like to ask guests that come on the show, and I never know if I deliver it in the right answer, so you can, honest feedback here is cool, but if you had like a psychedelic of any kind that would have someone,
or legal drug,
whatever, either way, like give any sort of insight into your mind, what would it be? Why?
More so, if somebody's gonna do a drug at your future show, what drug would it be? I feel like maybe it was maybe a better way to word that.
I guess. Okay.
So the first thing that I heard was like, if you could invent any drug that exists or not, like what? What effect would you want to be able to give someone from them just like consuming a substance? And I think back, you know, a couple minutes ago, I was talking about kind of my friend group and like just the absolute like confidence and can-do attitude that my friends instill in me all the time. Mm-hmm. And I definitely, the amount of growth that I've had from people being able to project confidence and like capability into mm-hmm. my mind and making me able to realize that in myself, if I could like package that up in something and feed it to people that need it, I think that would be phenomenal, because so many people experience self-doubt and like inferiority complex. And I think that if your heart is in the right place and you feel like you can do anything, you really can do anything.
I agree with that.
Maybe not fly or like walk through walls yet, but technology will get there someday. Exactly.
No, that's a pretty cool effect to have. Like, just imagining somebody taking a pill and then having the effect to just like send confident vibes to like other people to like boost them and hype them up, you know, like through everyday life, you know, whether it be like you're picking up your Starbucks order and be like, thanks, this is going to be the best coffee ever. And then that Starbucks person has like a great day through the rest of their shift. Or, you know, you meet your favorite artist after taking that confidence pill, and they're just like, that was the best set of my life and all that stuff. And now that artist has like the confidence to keep going and pursuing like a new album or a new sound or whatever, you know, like,
yeah,
that's a pretty cool effect to have. It was a good answer to that question.
Yeah. It's just, it bums me out to think that people would doubt themselves and then not pursue something that they feel really passionate about because of uncertainty or lack of confidence. Like, I have plenty of friends who make music or make art, and maybe like public opinion would be like, well, what you do is like very average and I don't really think it's that cool. But that doesn't matter. It's the fact that like the person that is doing that thing, creating that thing, enjoys the experience and they get something out of that. There should be like no lack of confidence on planet Earth that would prevent someone from wanting to pursue that experience, regardless of if the outcome is going to be like, I made a song and everyone hated it, but who cares? Because I loved the experience of making the song.
Yeah.
That's what I want to project onto as many people as I can.
That's good to like see someone with your passion, at least in the community. Cause it's like we said at the beginning of the show with like tired of the general stereotype of like white boys with laptops, but like, at least everyone we've had on the show so far has like the unique sound to them that like sets them apart from everyone else, which I like. I one final question, just to like have a better understanding of your music, would you say you had any like mentors in the community, like when first starting out,
or major inspirations?
Either one. Yeah,
I think you know what is funny, actually, I was thinking like, how far back does it go? And I have to say the person that I'm the most thankful to is my grandmother. This is my photo of my late grandmother Eva that I keep on my desk. She immigrated to Ellis Island with my grandfather in the 50s. They came from Norway, and she was, I don't know the full history of it, but my understanding was like, she was like a bit of a radio pop star in Norway, and she left that behind for, to pursue a better future for her family and to have a better, you know, economics available to them. Cause I think my family or my relatives, excuse me, I think they grew up really, really poor in Norway and in a time when there wasn't a lot happening in terms of work opportunities. And so there's a photo of her and my grandfather on the boat leaving Norway, and they're each holding like a suitcase. And then my grandma has her guitar strapped on her back, which I have sitting in the corner of my studio here. And she came and made sure that all of the folk music that she grew up playing and the songs that she played on the radio when she was doing that for a job, she made sure that all of those songs got passed down through our family. So my mom and her two sisters learned all of those songs. And then all of my sister and all of our cousins who were violin players growing up, we all learned those songs. And when you're a little kid, you don't necessarily understand the meaning behind all of the motions that you're going through. But now, in my adulthood, I can look at that photo and retrace all of the steps of my grandma wanting to pass that art down through the lineage of her family. And every summer, I travel back to Norway and work with young musicians at like a songwriter's camp every summer. And the whole thing has like come full circle. And my passion for creating music and making sure that everybody around me gets like some form of motivation to be the best version of themselves that they can be and find importance in every little thing that they do that they're passionate about and feel validated that it's okay to do that and pursue that. All of that definitely was born from my grandma passing music down to the family.
That's really beautiful.
That's like an inspirational story too.
Yeah.
No, someone give me a damn book deal.
Yeah, I mean, shit. Write it up, post it on Amazon. I'm sure you'll sell a few copies, man. But that's really beautiful in a sense because, you know, with family, it comes a time, like you said, unfortunately, she's like no longer with you. I haven't had my grandma with myself in quite some while, but as I get older, I realize that I'm now living for her and all the ancestors from before that took us to get to this place of my existence. So, you know, it's comforting to hear that other people do that as well, that like have their family as a motivation to keep pursuing, to keep doing better and keep moving along in life. Because at least the way I see it, I owe it to her, you know, like she went through a lot to bring not only my mother, but then me into this world. So it's really cool to hear that, you know, you have your grandmother as a big motivation to you.
Yeah. Grandmas are rad.
Oh yeah.
Love my grandma.
Those are the best.
I got to piggyback off what you were saying, cause I feel the same way about my family, and I've had a lot of like amazing gifts and personality traits passed down through my family. But I also have a lot of things that have come from my family that I'm like not super stoked on either. And I know I'm sure a lot of people listening, there's you know, a handful of us that are like, I don't feel that way about my family at all. I don't get along with my family like one bit. So this doesn't apply to me. And I think that I just hope that anyone listening to this, that you can understand that like friends are family too.
Exactly.
You don't necessarily get that from the people you're blood related to, but the people that you surround yourself with definitely are your family. And whether or not you share the same genes with them, you can still like, you know, bond souls with those people and have important, profound shared experiences with those people. So your family is who you call family, I think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't have like the best relationship with 100% of my family, but the ones that I do, I definitely hold dear. But what I hold as well right next to that in my heart is the friends that, for me personally, like I grew up in Texas and moved to Colorado. So starting fresh, starting not knowing anybody and choosing people who I spent my time with and choosing people who were really important with me and that really molded, I feel like, more of my adult mental state, you know what I mean? Like exposing yourself to people of different backgrounds, different cultures. Yeah. It definitely opens you up to a whole new view of the world that maybe your family from your hometown or wherever don't bring to you. You know what I mean? You can find other equal love from other people in this world.
Yeah. There's a saying in the music world that if you want to get popular in your hometown, you got to leave your hometown. Oh, and I think that applies to many things outside of music too. Like if you want to have a better perspective of yourself and where you come from and who your family is and all this stuff, I think the best thing you can do is like distance yourself from that, because it's so easy to become snowblind. You're in the middle of the storm and all you see is a snowstorm, and maybe stepping outside of that, you can realize like, actually the weather is not so bad there after all.
Yeah.
Well, and perspective is key. And that's kind of what we try and strive for on this show, is that perspective, I feel like, brings better understanding to everyone else listening, maybe, or if not, they're just listening to listen. But either way, like,
you gotta open up a whole new eye to get a whole new view of the world in my eyes. But
and two ears and one mouth, so like listen more than you speak, right?
Oh yeah, exactly.
I
like that. Okay,
well, I appreciate you coming on and reaching out and wanting to be on our shows. It was really nice getting to know the man behind the music that we listened to today, and definitely look forward to hearing more music that you come up with. You're definitely going to go on the Spotify follow list for sure.
Nice.
What are where can people find you?
Shout yourself out.
Beatsbytor.com is my website. You can find all my music and merch and updates about my live stream and life and all that stuff, and anywhere on social media at Beatsbytor, BEATSBYTOR. And thank you two so much for having me on the show. You guys are really, really cool. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Sorry. Yeah.
Honestly, we appreciate you being our first like Zoom call
guest.
Yeah, that's the right word.
Interview, think about it. Podcast, space cast, whatever you
want.
Yeah, it was a fun time. It was good vibes. You know, look forward to, like I said, seeing what you create, and hope our paths cross at some sort of festival or some sort. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
shows. It'd be cool to hang out with you one of these days, you know?
Let's will it into existence. It'll happen someday. And I look forward to it. Absolutely, best of luck with everything you guys are doing with this podcast. I think this is a great concept and you guys are super fun to talk to. And any way that I can support you guys, a retweet or whatever, like, you know where to find me in my DMs and stuff. So don't be a stranger, okay?
We appreciate it, man. Really. Sorry. I'm just really stoned now.
Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Much love and success to you in this world.
We'll probably have it uploaded by 11:11 our time is what I try and go for. Like, I don't know, some weird like superstition thing.
Yeah.
make
a wish
come true by releasing.
Yeah, totally. Oh, by 11:11 tonight, so it's like a couple hours from now.
Yeah, I was planning on doing some. I already have like. Yeah, a couple hours from now. Sorry.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna stop recording here the audio on my end, and I'll throw this in my Google Drive and email you guys the link.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
I swear I've seen a ghost when I needed you the most. Seen through you as you float away. Feels like you were here yesterday. Now I'm alone. Took two, you say it's only medicine. Big size surprise, you cheated death again. No, you always trying to make the best of it, but dead ends contend with your empathy. These days the distance is proof to me. Things change, we ain't like it used to be. Got answers, but you ain't listening. Seen the dark side to you and Three's company.